So today I am lucky enough to be joined by Professor Angus McNabola. So how are you, Professor?
Very good, Paula. Yeah, thanks very much. You can just call me Angus. It's perfectly fine. Pleasure to be on the show, and thanks for the opportunity to talk about my experience of EU funding.
Fantastic. So we should talk a little bit about yourself initially. You're the lead partner and principal investigator for the project. So do you want to maybe start off? Let's start talking about you and your work in general. Give us a little bit of an overview about what you do.
Sure, yeah. So I'm a professor of energy and environment in civil engineering, civil structural and environmental engineering in Trinity. And I'm a civil engineer by background. I worked in engineering consultancy for a few years. That's a long time ago now, mostly in the area of water, supply, provision, and a whole variety of things. And I've worked in Trinity now for 15 years and teaching students about how to design water systems and also carry out lots of research about trying to come up with more energy efficient means of water supply. I'm sure we'll get into the details of it, but water supply consumes an awful lot of energy, and so we're trying to make it a bit more sustainable.
Yeah. So, I mean, what was it about energy that you loved initially? I mean, was it something you kind of... I'm assuming it's not something you kind of grew up and thought, I'm going to be an engineer when I'm older.
Well, it depends on what, when I'm sure at some point I thought I was going to be a fireman, but
yeah.
I did actually get a job when I was quite young, when I was, I think I was 13, and one of my next door neighbors was the managing director of a company in Sligo, which is where I'm originally from, Jennings O'Donovan and Partners. And I started working there in the summer. I worked there every summer for, I think, 6 or 7 years until I graduated as an engineer. Then I worked there full time. So yes, I've been an engineer for a long time. It was a little bit one dimensional and boring in some ways, but also it was a very interesting career because doing so many different things. But yeah, I've been interested in engineering, buildings and DIY and fixing electronics or whatever for a long time. So I had those kind of interests of how things work and how I might fix them for many years.
Yeah, I suppose it's like, you know, boys with interest in cars, you know, and they grow up to end up designing cars and all this kind of stuff.
Yes, well, my father was very interested in DIY, and he forced me initially to help him, and then I kind of got to enjoy it. So it kind of stemmed from that.
Yeah, okay, cool. So let's start talking about Dor Uisge. Can you tell us a bit about the name? Obviously, I think there's Welsh there and the Irish, because it's a Welsh-Irish project.
Yeah, so Dor Uisge is funded by the Interreg Ireland Wales programme, and Dor Uisge is an acronym for the project, but essentially I won't bother explaining the full title, but it's about water and energy and trying to make it water supply and water use more energy efficient. The word Dor is the Welsh for water, as the word Uisge is the Irish for water. And so at the time of seeking funding, it was a clever way of appealing to the funding agency being Ireland and Wales, but since having it, you know, rarely in an audience who know what both words mean, so I have to explain it many times.
Yeah, so I mean, what is the project all about for, you know, for someone that's sort of coming into this totally green, so, let's just say.
So really what it's about is trying to make the supply and use of water more energy efficient. And, you know, so everybody uses water for something or other. You know, if you had water in the tap, people don't appreciate the glass of water you might have had this morning. It consumes an awful lot of energy to get it to you in the form that it is. It's got, you know, it's a food grade substance at that point. And so, you know, typically the water sector is about the fourth most energy intensive sector in most developed societies. And a lot of that is, there's a variety of reasons for that, but pumping water around is one activity that consumes a lot. So the pumps are always on and taps are always running. So it consumes a lot of energy. And, you know, if you take Ireland, for example, the biggest single electricity customer in Ireland is Irish Water. And because we're also funded in Wales, the biggest single electricity customer in Wales is also Welsh Water, right? So unsurprisingly, lots of our electricity goes into that. And so the water sector all over the world is well aware of that and wants to be more energy efficient, because if we use a lot of energy, well, obviously we're contributing to emissions and, you know, it being not sustainable. So the project's core goal is to try and improve that water supply process, but also on the user side. So we put a lot of energy into water, mostly for heating, and a lot of that gets wasted. And so the project is also interested in trying to make water use a little bit more efficient as well. So it applies to both suppliers and users.
Yeah, that's the thing. It comes out of the tap. You know, you just think, oh, water comes out the tap. You don't really think about the pre-process, you know, where this water comes from, the processes that it goes through to get to us.
No. And there's a huge expense that we're all paying for indirectly, you know, through taxation as a result. I think it's in the order of, you know, more than $1 billion a year that costs Ireland, and similar costs in other places. So, yeah, it's very expensive. A lot of that has to do with energy. And so we're trying to make it more energy efficient through a variety of ways. So the project involves myself in engineering, but it also involves other researchers in the business school here in Trinity, also in over on the Welsh side in geography and environmental science. So it comes up, the project is coming up with specific devices, technologies from us engineers, but also various policies and other ways of trying to tackle the energy inefficiency of water supply and water use.
Yeah, I mean, you know, water, I always kind of think of like turbines and all that kind of stuff. I don't know, do we have turbines in Ireland?
We do, yeah. So that's interesting that you mentioned that. So that's one of the ways that we're trying to make water supply more energy efficient is using hydropower turbines in water pipelines, which is not what they're intended for. So it's like turbines in water systems are, you can imagine the big dam and the large turbine and generating electricity from the flow. So we do have some of those in Ireland. There's a few on the Liffey and the Shannon. I think probably Ireland's first electricity source was hydropower right. In the west from Ardna Cruachan. I think it produces around 110 megawatts, something like that. But in modern terms, Ireland has very little hydropower. I think, you know, maybe about 2% of our energy comes from small. We don't have the geography for traditional hydropower. You know, the terrain normally requires high mountains and that. But in water supply systems, you can also apply the idea of hydropower to those, right? And so the turbines in question are much smaller because, you know, the pipelines are smaller, contain less water in a big river. But the same principle applies in that in different parts of the water network, we sometimes have too much energy in there. And so that happens because, imagine a pipe goes down the edge of a hill or something, the pressure can go up and down. And so, you know, if you turn on your tap at the sink, and sometimes customers might complain that there's too little pressure. We also don't want to have too much pressure because that causes bursts, but also leakage. We have a lot of leakage, and we have a lot of leakage in Ireland, but we have leakage in every country, and it's unavoidable. You know, there's a point at which it costs more money to find the leaks and fix them than it is worthwhile. So you always have a certain amount of leakage, and the higher the pressure is in the system, the more water comes out of those little cracks. So we try to keep the pressure down, and we do that in different ways with valves and pressure release systems. But you can install a turbine that does the same thing. So it takes the pressure out where you don't want to have too much pressure, but generates electricity as a byproduct. So that's what have been working on in Duarishka, one of the things, technologies. So for a long time, we were trying to come up with how can we develop this basically miniaturized turbine. We developed it here in the lab, and then and ultimately in 2019, we installed it in one in Ireland and one in Wales. So there's one in a treatment works, a water treatment works in Wexford, Blackstairs Mountains. It's called Blackstairs Group Water Scheme. And it's a kind of a rural water supply, and it provides water for about 1,000 connections, which, you know, maybe each connection might have 4 people in the house. I'm not exactly sure of the population. But so at a place in that network where they have too much pressure that they don't require, we have installed this turbine. It's installed in the turbine at the treatment works, which is run by an Irish company, EPS. And the turbine provides it depends on the amount of flow being used and so on, but around a quarter at its best operating point, around a quarter of the energy that's required to treat the water. So we can reduce the energy bill considerably, right?
Yeah.
At the time, that was obviously very beneficial, and they were very pleased about that. And it's been running successfully since then. But, you know, things in terms of energy costs have also changed enormously since then. You know, the cost of energy has skyrocketed.
Yeah.
So, you know, so it really is a very valuable thing to have now is a means of reducing your energy bill by quarter. There's another example of that, which isn't part of our project, but existed before in Bartry Reservoir in the Dublin or Wicklow Mountains. I'm not sure which exactly it is at that point, but it's that's part of Irish Water's public system. It was developed by, I guess, Dublin City Council at the time, and it produces, I think, 90 kilowatts at the inlet to the treatment works, and that treatment works provides water. It used to provide water for Dublin, but as Dublin grew, it provides water for Bray and I think maybe parts of South Dublin. But that turbine, all the water that goes through there, produces 90 kilowatts, and the treatment works only requires 30 to run, and so the other 60 gets sold to the grid. So that example of where you can put a turbine at the start of the treatment works, and it makes it a net producer of energy instead of a consumer. So hydropower can have various levels of successes in how you can help it to improve the energy efficiency of the system. So if you that sounds great, but if you take it all collectively, you would never be able to generate enough hydropower in a water network to produce enough power that everything needs. Just there's not enough of it available. But in certain instances, it's very beneficial.
Yeah. I mean, how big are these turbines? Do you know what I mean? To people like me, you know, you think of turbines and you imagine these, you know, these colossal units. I mean, and you say you're making them in the lab. I mean, how big are they?
So the one in Blackstairs in Wexford, I guess, is probably about the size of a table. Maybe
right.
Not particularly big. It looks like a conventional pump.
Okay.
And essentially, it's a conventional pump, which we have reversed to behave as a turbine. When hydropower is that small, the cost of it becomes very important. So the turbine that you're imagining, the really massive one that you can stand on, those aren't lying on the shelves. Those are made individually by specialized companies. But, you know, per kilowatt hour of energy produced, they are very efficient. When you start to try and miniaturize them, they become very expensive. So we've had to try and make our turbines from off-the-shelf products that are really engineered, which essentially water pumps that are operated backwards. So, a pump pumps water and consumes electricity, but we reversed it. So it's the pump that uses water going through it in reverse to generate electricity using basically the same parts. So those are your question is how big. They're generally not so big, size of a table, but the more kilowatts it produces, the larger it becomes.
Yeah.
So the one that we installed in Wales is at a historical site. It's kind of a more traditional, we call it a run of river, but basically it takes a little bit diversion out of a stream in a place in Wales called T. Mawr Wubberland. We call it TMW for short because it's difficult for me to pronounce. We've got difficult words in Dwarishka, T. Mawr Wubberland. And it's part of the National Trust. And at that place, it contains a 16th century farmhouse where Bishop Morgan was the famous guy in Welsh culture. He translated the Bible into Welsh, the first Bible translated into Welsh, and is preserved there. And so the National Trust are a big landowner, and also they own a lot of historic buildings, which are very hard to make energy efficient because they're so old and materials aren't modern. So one of the ways that they try a variety of things to try and reduce their energy bill and so their impact on the environment. So like they put solar panels where they can and turbine. This place happens to have a river traveling past it, it's quite a small stream. And so we installed this miniaturized turbine there to basically provide power to this 16th century farmhouse. And the power that it needs is essentially to keep the humidity in the room at certain levels so that the Bible is preserved.
Oh, wow.
Imagine, you know, during the winter when visitors are coming in and they're wet from an area which is, you know, kind of hiking type country, they bring a lot of moisture, and so we're trying to control them. So over there, it's quite small. Again, the turbine is about the size of a desk. You can fit it on the desk, and it provides power to the house. And you know, if you were a farm owner, you could do something similar yourself if you happen to have water going through your land which has enough of a height drop on it. So you need a flow of water, but it also has to fall a certain distance for hydropower to work.
Yeah. So the, how did Durishka, how did it all start? What was the catalyst for the project?
It's kind of spun out of a previous also Interreg Ireland Wales project, which predated this one, but a much smaller project. It was called Hydro BPT, and it was essentially the idea of this hydropower and water network. So we're exploring more on a kind of a feasibility desktop type way as to whether the amount of energy you could get from using hydropower in water pipelines is worth trying to find or trying to exploit and developing technology to do it. And so that project, I think started, and my memory is going, I think it started in 2010, around that time frame, 2010, 2011. And, you know, the answer was, well, it actually looks like there's quite a useful amount of energy there to be saved. And so it was quite a success. And then in the next program of the Ireland Wales program, because kind of, I'm sure you'll be exploring this in your series, that the, you know, these EU research programs, they operate in different periods of, so different kind of 7-year cycles. When the next one came around, well, we thought, well, we have an idea here that is proven, like it seems feasible. If we, in the second round, we will just try and develop the actual technology, put it in the field, and does it actually work over a long time? So it stemmed from that, but also then this Durishka project does more than just hydropower. So there was a couple of different technologies. So we wanted to not only make the water supplier more energy efficient, but also the water user. So something that I was always interested in, you know, just in my daily life, is that, you know, get up in the morning, have a shower, or let's say as the water user, a lot of the energy you waste is to do with heating water. So you use water, hot water, for various things. And, you know, as an ordinary domestic building occupant, but also the same applies to commerce and industry. But let's say you had the shower in the morning and you had a nice shower. Most people have it around 40 degrees or so, plus or minus a bit, depending on how warm you like it. What goes down the drain is 30 degrees, yeah. Also plus or minus.
Yeah, yeah.
And the water that you took in to the house today is probably started off around 10 degrees, and you have to heat it up to 60, and then you're sending water out at 60 degrees. And it's a tremendous waste of energy. Mm. And so, you know, I was over in Wales last week. We're installing monitors. Part of that work is to measure how much energy is wasted. We're installing monitors at a student accommodation in Bangor, in North Wales. And you lift the manhole to put the monitor in, and the steam is coming out of it. What a waste of energy. And you're pumping hot water underground for no reason. So we're working on trying to develop basically heat exchangers, ways of recycling this wasted heat in different parts of the sewer network. So the idea of a shower, everybody knows that because from any weather, but there are lots of other users of hot water. And so if you think of the things that use hot water, like leisure centers or restaurants, and I guess we're also working with industrial processes. We're working here with ABP Foods in Tipperary, which are a meat processing plant. But any kind of food processing generally involves a lot of hot water use.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you visit these places, they have their own wastewater treatment works, because the wastewater that they produce, not like what comes from your shower, it tends to be more pollutant, so it requires a specific treatment plant there on the site, kind of a small one. And you can see the steam coming out of. And of course, the business owners realize that themselves. Well, we're spending a lot of money here on heating water up to 90 degrees to disinfect things and disinfect food for consumers, and then most of it just goes down the drain.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're developing basically heat exchangers to try and recover that heat and send it back to the building. So in the example of a shower, you could imagine you could replace the drain underneath the shower with something that recaptures that heat and sends it back into your heat storage system. Well, you wouldn't have to heat the water up as much. So yeah. You would save electricity. And if that electricity came from a coal-fired power station, well, there would be less emissions and so on. So that's the other side of Durishka's engineering work, is trying to come up with these heat exchangers. And so it's on the smellier end of the water cycle. A lot of work in trying to make heat exchangers work. I guess most people won't know what a heat exchanger looks like, but it's some kind of a coil, really, that's placed into a hot water body, and you place a colder water body flowing through the coil. It picks up the heat. In wastewater, there's a lot of waste in there, you imagine, so it's a difficult environment. So that's what we're working on. And Same with the hydropower. So we have pilot sites trying to test this technology in Wales and in Ireland.
Yeah, how did the EU funding aspect of this come about? Were you kind of there for the initial setting up of getting the EU funding?
The EU funding, yes, yeah. So the EU funding, so there are varieties of EU fundings, but basically it is a, you know, the EU has a budget for funding research in line with specific priorities. And so you can imagine that the priorities are things like climate change, innovation, and various initiatives that they want to promote. And on the basis of that, they offer bids and potential to win funding. And so it's a competitive process where you write a proposal and saying, well, this is my idea, and this is what I think it will achieve. And that was, you know, how it would have essentially worked with Dúirfeáilte. We pitched the idea of hydropower in water networks and what we think we can save in terms of energy and recovering heat from wastewater. You know, we're also doing other things which I haven't mentioned, trying to work out the life cycle impact of, you know, some of my colleagues over in Wales are carrying out various policy analyses and benchmarking and so on. So we put together all our ideas and essentially it's a kind of a pitch for the funding agency, and they would receive lots of applications and they would decide, well, what they think is the best, you know, set of proposals that will win the funding. So, you know, so these things are usually, you know, their competitiveness can be very high. So, you know, some of the funding streams might be 6% of the proposals will funded. So it's very competitive. It's good reason. Then the standard of what gets funded is high generally.
Yeah. So no pressure, no pun intended.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, I'm hearing from previous guests that the competitiveness in getting the funding is crazy. You know, the amount of the percentage of projects that apply for funding and actually get it is actually very, very small.
Yeah. So it depends on the call and also the nature. So it can vary from being very small chances to, you know, something slightly more reasonable. When I was a young professor here, some of my colleagues suggested if you managed to win one out of every five proposals that you wrote, that would be a very good return.
Yeah, yeah.
So you could expect, you know, that you're not going to win all the time. Obviously, it's lots of organisations interested in trying out ideas.
Yeah. So, I mean, what has the EU funding meant to you as a project? I'm assuming that without the EU funding, it couldn't happen.
You know, it has meant an awful lot, I guess, that the funding has provided. Like the Dúirfeáilte project started out as a funding for 5 years to carry out the work that we did. So it started off with, you know, with developing a technology idea, you know, in the lab, also then building it and installing it in the field, and then running it over a long time and to show that it actually works, with the idea that hopefully business is created from this and people replicate the idea. So it provides sort of a long enough support to be able to employ people to work on this idea. So obviously I can't do all these things myself. Loads of researchers who work here in Trinity and over in Bangor on these various ideas, and they're dedicate their full time to different aspects of the project. So the funding is essential to what we achieve. You know, it's also essential to the good things that we achieve. They wouldn't exist without it. So if that funding wasn't available, you know, it would be impossible for me to developed that turbine and install it in a water treatment works and show that it can save a quarter of the energy that is required. So, you know, the costs of doing that are just too high, you know, for the university to bear itself. We're not profit making. You know, we're here for a public good, so we have to cover the costs somehow. And so generally the research funding just about covers the cost. So some of the university management would say that it's actually costs us a little bit more than is, you know, the actual cost we get in, but we're prepared to sacrifice that a little bit. So, you know, it's really tremendously important. We couldn't achieve what we did without it. And so I guess the research cycle for me as an engineer, it kind of depends on what discipline you're in, but engineering is a very applied science. It's fundamentally a applied science, taking science and applying it to problems, coming up with solutions. So it's a very, you know, in the commercial, it's a business in the commercial world, and this funding has allowed us to take an idea, which start, you know, the science for it, developed through the full cycle to an actual working system, And, you know, some of the researchers that worked in Dourishka now have started their own companies, which are commercializing the idea, are actively installing turbines in, you know, various parts of the world.
It must be so rewarding, though. Do you know what you're doing? You know that you're doing, you know, what you're doing is a life changing for the public. It's, you know, down the road, it's going to change the way people get their water and they use their water.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. It's very rewarding to think of an idea that just occurred to you a long time ago, to see it through to fruition and then into a, you know, business activity and people contributing to the economy and paying their taxes and so on the basis of that. So that, yes, that's tremendously important. It doesn't always work out like that, but lots of research ideas, that's kind of the nature of it. You know, there are ideas which may work, lots of them don't, but we could just still explore them. This one, we've had some great successes here, which is brilliant. So another beauty of the funding allows you to try out things which are, they often call them high risk, gain. So take the risk, to take the gamble that maybe this idea will work and maybe it won't. But we'll invest in the potential that it seems to have. And, you know, if, as long as a significant percentage of those result in that potential that they had, well, then it's, you know, it's worth pursuing. It's obviously working for the EU as a whole, you know, because, you know, we're increasing innovation, we're working on the green economy to keep ourselves modernized and at the cutting edge.
So thank you so, so much for talking to me today, Angus. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Yeah, it's great to have the opportunity to tell people a little bit about research and, you know, the nature of it and also the impact for the water cycle. So remember, the next time you're having a shower, where's all that energy going?
So that's all from us this week. Thank you so much to my guest, Angus McNabola. Thanks also to the production team, Dorothy Mayer-Holtkamp and Ed Grinnell. You can listen again to our interviews for this series at nearfm.ie/podcast. Or you can email us at europe@near.ie.